evening and welcome to Out Radio. I'm your host, Jeff Rindler, and the executive director of the Hudson Valley LGBTQ Community Center in beautiful Uptown Kingston. Each week on Out Radio, we highlight the LGBTQ voice that often goes unheard. We have a great show tonight. Tonight, we have Ulster County Legislative Minority Leader Hector Rodriguez. Sorry, Hector. He's going to join us tonight to talk about his great career here in Ulster County, as well as a human rights law that's upcoming. But we're going to start in a few minutes with Melanie Lewis, author of Slipping Into Darkness, Blinded by the Light. This is a life-affirming memoir. She shares the journey from obscure shadows into the glow of light and life. I was just reading the book. It's really quite gorgeous. And of course, I am joined every week by my incredible producer, the man who pushes my buttons, pushes the buttons, Ron Van Warmer. How are you, Ron?
You are too kind. Thank you very much. I am doing just fine. What a heat wave. We're having a heat wave.
God, burning in my heart.
I know. And then the other day it was 50 degrees and I was freezing to death.
You know, you're one of those. If it's cold, you complain it's cold. I would not complain about the heat because I really love it hot. Although I will say, even for me, the second floor of my house, like most houses, is much hotter.
Yeah.
But you want to know what? I love the summer. I love the beach.
Me too.
No complaints.
None here either.
Oh, my God.
It can be 95 degrees all summer long, and I'll be just fine with that.
You and me both.
Just fine with that.
So we have this great show tonight. Melanie, who I've known for a while, really wrote this extraordinary book, which we'll get more into. And then we can also talk to Hector Rodriguez later. There is a law that we're put before the legislature. It's a human rights law that will really, hopefully, end discriminatory practices or hold people accountable. And that's everything from housing, that's to going into a supermarket,
baking
going
cakes,
into an ice cream parlor. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you are discriminated against, yeah. And what we're trying to do is right now people have to go to Albany when this happens, and we want to do it here in Ulster County. We want to be able to really, to be honest, use a restorative justice model. Because we don't want people to be fined or this or that. What we want to do is engage people in a conversation if there's merit and really have people own what they did and move through it. So it's really quite exciting.
It is exciting.
Yeah. And then Thursday, we're going to have Melanie at the center doing a book reading. So we'll talk a little more about that.
Yeah.
And for those that are interested, so the center, you can just always go to our website, lgbtqcenter.org, or call 331-5300 to get more information about the events. The July calendar is out, and it is smoking.
It is full of all kinds of great stuff. I just got mine in the mail the other day.
Oh.
And there is tons of stuff going on this month.
I know. We actually have free ballet class tomorrow night. But I'll be at the legislature, so maybe I'll do a plié in front of the legislature. I'm undecided about how I'm going to frame it.
Oh, yeah, I wish I could be there to see that.
I know. So are you? Ron hurt his back, actually.
My leg is
for those who have a bad back, there's nothing worse than a bad back.
Oh, yeah, the sciatica. Oh, yeah, I thought that was for old people.
I thought sciatica. Wasn't he? I think he was my third cousin on my mother's side.
Oh, he's Cy? I knew Cy. Yeah.
A good guy. So listen, why don't we get started?
Let's do that.
Enough out of us. So everyone, first of all, thank you so much for tuning in. I just want to take a moment. You know, the response that we continue to receive is really quite lovely. And I always welcome people to email us at info@radiokingston.org. with comments, questions, or, you know, we have Dear Pinky, who the wonderful Pinky Socrates, so you can email questions about love, life, and sexuality.
Pinky makes me laugh, and there's always a bit of truth and honesty to everything that Pinky does.
That's true.
And it's beautiful.
And yes. So info@radiokingston.org. Let us know how we're doing and let us know all that good stuff. Okay, so I'm literally sitting across from Melanie Lewis right now. So, as I said, Melanie wrote a book, a beautiful memoir called Slipping Into Darkness, Blinded by the Light, Seeing Beyond Me. It's an exploration of issues from drug addiction to domestic violence to boating, building beach houses in the Bahamas, and for me, most importantly, watching One Life to Live, which I love. But we'll get to One Life to Live. So, Melanie, welcome.
Thank you, Jeff. And I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity to share a little bit of my memoir with everyone. And I want to thank you guys at the center because you're doing a great job and you're a vital part of the community.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. So the title, let's just jump right in. So the title, Slipping Into Darkness, Blinded by the Light, Seeing Beyond Me. How did you come up with that title? What is the meaning?
Okay, Slipping Into Darkness first. Let me premise this with... I am a physical therapist by profession,
mm-hmm.
and the book opens with my mother dying. That was in 1985, and at that time, it was the height of my career. I was making a lot of money, doing very well, and I had worked very hard to get to where I was.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. During the next 7 years, from 1985 to 1992, every year, someone close to me died, either a family member or a close friend.
Sure.
Lost quite a few friends to AIDS
mm-hmm.
during that time period.
Mm-hmm.
In 1992.
And your brother.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. In 1992, I lost my grandmother and my brother, the two great loves of my life.
Sure.
So during this time, it was just a very devastating time for me. But I was working, and that was my refuge.
Mm.
And so that helped me to get through everything. Just healing people helped me to heal a bit,
mm-hmm.
or so I thought. In 1994, I was advised that they were going to close the physical therapy department. I was working for an HMO.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had my own private practice there, which I didn't have to pay any rent for any office space, plus I was treating their patients. They informed me that they were going to close the physical therapy office and open a doctor's office. Well, that was the straw that broke the proverbial camel's back.
Mm-hmm.
I was devastated because it was just another loss, and this time I lost my whole identity.
Sure.
Okay? I was tired and I was hurt, and I said, no, I can't do this anymore. I give up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I stopped practicing physical therapy.
Wow.
And I actually went into real estate for a little bit with my then current lover.
Mm-hmm.
I would go to the office, hang out, just something to do.
Right.
But I realized I was going into a slow spiral downward.
Mm-hmm.
And often I would find myself walking around my apartment, because at that time I was living in the Bronx, singing War's old song, Slipping Into Darkness.
Yeah,
and I was.
Sure.
I was slipping into darkness.
Right, right.
So that's where that comes from. Seeing Beyond Me actually, Blinded by the Light actually comes from the Bible. Saul of Tarsus.
Mm-hmm.
was a persecutor of Christians. And he was on the road to Damascus one day. He was actually going to persecute more Christians. And Jesus blinded him for 3 days, at which time he told him where to go to see some prophet. And the prophet removed the scales from his eyes, and he was able to see.
Oh.
And from that time on, he became a Jesus follower. And he also wrote most of the New Testament in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
He became Paul. Instead of Saul of Tarsus, he's Paul.
Okay.
So,
I thought Blinded by the Light, because the first one was a song, was that song, Blinded by the Light.
Yeah.
Ripped up like a goose, another runner. And I thought, wow, you're really using the metaphor.
I use a lot of music in my song.
Well, let's take a step back. Like, this is really great to hear this, but I mean... Your child, I mean, you suffered trauma. And so to me, in reading it, because it's a beautiful book, you should get it. Again, you know, it's available on Amazon by Melanie E. Lewis. Talk a little, because to me that was like really going through the eye of the needle, and I think many people can relate to having very difficult, childhoods.
And I'll tell you something, I was dealing with that also, because after my mother died, All these repressed childhood memories started coming up.
Sure.
And I was dealing with that in addition to my mother's death, in addition to issues that I had with my mother before she died, or while she was married to my stepfather, right, that I never addressed.
Sure.
So all this emotional turmoil was going on within me at the time, and then during the 7 years of all the other losses. All of that was contributed to my slipping into darkness.
Right. All right, so you were like a 70s girl. You were like a 60s, 70s girl, right? So you were like at Bonnie and Clyde, probably at the Duchess. So that was like this really extraordinary time in LGBTQ history, right?
Yes, it was.
What they were calling then is the gay liberation movement. Mm-hmm. So what was that like? You were living in the East Village. What was that like living through that time?
That was fun, I'll tell you. Well, let me finish the Blinded by the Light, though. So, after everything, I walked out of my building one day, and I looked at everyone, and they started to look like cartoon characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to myself, girlfriend, you are losing your mind. It's time to go. Okay? I moved up to Hudson Valley then.
Oh.
Yeah, that's when I moved in. That was in 1995.
Mm-hmm.
So the Blinded by the Light was because I realized during my spiritual sojourn that I had been blind to a lot of things, been blind to things within me, blind to things without me, and I started to learn how to see spiritually. So that's the Blinded by the Light and the Seeing Beyond Me.
Beautiful.
Okay. Now, East Village, I got my first apartment in the East Village when I was 19. And it was because I came out to my mother, or my mother kind of, I won't even say came out, because to me, I was always out. Mm-hmm. Okay. From the time I was seven, I had crushes on girls so I knew. I kissed my first girlfriend when I was 14. But then shortly after that, I got put into rehab because I was shooting heroin at the age of 13. So I was in rehab from 14 until 15, almost 16, 16 months. But at the age of 19, I was working already and going to school. And I was on the phone with a friend of mine. Remember the Village Voice and the classified ads?
GWM. That's what I remember.
Gay white male, right?
Those ads to
GBF.
Me... GBF. Those ads to me were like erotica, because I was a kid. I was like 13, and just reading them and seeing a GWM looking to meet someone
else,
it actually was sexually stimulating for
really?
Me. Really? Yeah.
I was just happy. I was just very joyful. I was like, oh, man, what? This... pages and pages of
pages,
gay women, lesbians, which I don't think we called we didn't call ourselves lesbians back then. Everybody was just gay.
I know, right? Yeah. The gay lift. Right.
Now everybody is
GW,
very specialized.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
GWW, right? No. GWW, right? Gay white woman. Or GBW.
Oh, yeah, because she... Yeah. G what?
Gay. Anyway, moving on.
Okay.
So you're in the Village Voice.
I'm speaking to someone who I met through the Village Voice.
Uh-huh.
On a phone that, you know, attached to the wall with a wire,
with
all
the
of that.
The long cord.
Yes. And so my mother must have overheard some of the conversation.
Oh.
So then she calls me into the living room, and she's like, Melanie, she's sitting on the couch. We have this blue couch. And she looks at me, she says, Melanie, do you like girls? And so I said, yes, Mommy, I do. And she sat there and she started crying. It was like, oh, what did I do wrong? And I was like, oh, look, mommy, you didn't do anything wrong. It's all me.
Right.
Okay? So then she just sat there and stared at me. So I'm like, okay, enough of this. I dismissed myself and went on about my business.
Mm-hmm.
So then later on that day, we're walking, you know, she walks past me, I walk past her, and then she looked at me and she said, you can have to move. I can't stand to look at you.
That's so awful.
Yeah, so I said, okay, Mom, no problem. I already started to look for an apartment, which I had.
Mm-hmm.
So I found my first apartment in the East Village. It was one of those old tenement buildings.
Yeah.
With the tub in the kitchen, the little tub in the kitchen, and the little bathroom off of the living room and stuff like that. So my mother saw the apartment. She was like, listen, you can stay home and, you know, stay home. You can save your money. You can buy a car. And I said, no, Mommy, I'm good. I'm good.
Oh, then she wanted you to go back.
She didn't want me to live in that tenement apartment. Yeah. So.
I got it. Okay.
She was like, okay, never mind. Maybe I can't stand to look at you. Okay. But it wasn't long before my mother came around. She used to come to the East Village and hang out with me.
Mm-hmm.
We used to go to Washington Square Park and, you know, go to the movies. And she was just fascinated with how I could make a whole day of just walking around and hanging out in the village.
Mm.
And she started to accept it. And then one day she said to me, you know what, Melanie? If anybody ever, because someone in the family must have said something to her. And she said, if anybody ever says anything to you about your sexuality or however we were terming it back then, she said, don't worry about it. As long as I accept you, you don't have to worry about anybody else.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah. But I find, Jeff, that people treat you according to how you portray yourself.
That's
okay?
Right.
If I, you know, acted as if I was ashamed of who I was or what I was doing, then it would have given her leverage to be critical, to put me down, as is what often happens with gay people, which is why we have gay pride, which is such a wonderful thing.
Right. So the funny thing about that is, so it's funny you say that, because someone recently asked me, they said, well, when did your parents accept you, you know, when you came out? And I said, well, yeah, on paper they did. Like, my parents were, you know, liberal Jews. I like, yeah. But I said, I don't think they fully accepted me being gay until I accepted
mm-hmm.
me fully being gay.
That's exactly
it's when I came to terms with it, they did. It was this, like, this mutual process. So I couldn't
agree
with
me more. I had already accepted it. I was very happy when I moved to the East Village. I'm like, oh God, I'm free. And then Bonnie and Clyde's was, I was in the East Village, Bonnie and Clyde's was in the West Village, and I worked in the West Village.
Mm-hmm.
I was a telephone operator at night
because
I went to school during the day. So I would ride my bike to my job, park it, put the switchboard on automatic, plug everybody up to, and then ride the bike over to Bonnie and Clyde's and go party all night long. So it worked out wonderfully.
Yeah, you know? I love that one line in the book. Then I would sit there and see who was going to be lucky tonight.
Oh.
And then you did add, I was the lucky one.
Yes.
That was a nice little, but I remember that. I remember walking around the village back then and, you know, and then, you know, I know you talk in your book about drinking and having a life that was working and then coming home and watching all my children, One Life to Live in General Hospital.
That was when I was depressed. That was when I was slipping into darkness.
Let me tell you, I did the same thing. Well, never all my children, never General Hospital. All I cared about was Lantano County, Vicky and Dorian.
Yes, yes.
But it's funny because part of your story, I was like, oh my God, that's what I would do. I'd get a bacon cheeseburger deluxe,
mm-hmm.
and this roommate, and we'd come home, we'd watch One Life to Live.
Oh, well, I would get cognac, cocaine, and cigarettes.
A different kind of deluxe.
And then after the soap operas, Oprah came on.
Oh.
So it was, you know, for all you people under 30, we were watching VCRs.
I loved my VCR.
Okay, back then, which I'm sure you guys don't even know about. But
all the tapes, and they weren't labeled, and you couldn't find which show.
No, I labeled my stuff. Everything was
much better. Well, it was the cognac that must have helped.
Or the Coke. But yeah, I did that every night, and then I had to give up the cocaine because I couldn't breathe after a while. I was like, oh my God, I can't breathe. What am I doing?
It's amazing that you can give it up. A lot of people could not
I went to church.
Drugs.
I did. I was like, I'm not going back into rehab.
Mm-hmm.
And I need
so
help.
What was that like? Day Top? I mean, those are things I remember. Day Top and
Phoenix House. Phoenix House was great.
Wasn't that on 72nd Street? Or
there were several Phoenix Houses throughout. Yeah, I was at Phoenix House Far Rockaway out in Queens.
Uh-huh.
We were right down a block from the beach.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. So, but it was very enlightening being a teenager in a house full of ex-drug addicts and ex-cons.
Yeah. And everyone older than you, right?
Yeah, I was. Well, there was a 9-year-old boy there who was shooting drugs.
Oh my
and
God! How is that even possible?
I that's what I don't know. I talk about it in my book, and I'm like, you know, what pain must he have experienced,
right,
to shoot drugs at 9 years old?
Mm-hmm.
What was that about? You know,
mm-hmm.
But it was very interesting because most of my life, especially after my mother died, my mother married a man who was not my father, my stepfather, but. Most of my life, after my mother got married, I grew up in a house of domestic violence, so I felt very insecure all the time. I
mm-hmm.
felt very, and we lived in, when I first went to move with them, we lived in a two-family house. So when they would start to fight, or when he would start to beat her, mm-hmm. my upstairs neighbor would come down and always stop it. But we moved. And we moved into a house by ourselves.
Right.
And I knew then. And when I was 5 when she got married, and I knew then, I was like, this is a mistake. This is,
amazing how kids just know?
Yeah, yeah. And I wouldn't even go to the wedding. My mother begged me. And I was like, Mommy, I have a headache. I can't. I really did. I was laying in the bunk bed.
Not
I was like,
I have a headache.
No.
just couldn't
You're on
do
your
it.
Own with this one,
you
sister.
You couldn't do it. Oh, God.
But when we left that two-family house and lived on our own, there was a knot of a fear that just developed in me
mm-hmm.
and never went away until I was in Phoenix House.
Right.
And while I was there, for the first time, I felt like I belonged. I started to relax. I started to feel like, okay, yeah, it's going to be all right.
Mm.
And I started, you know, I listened to other people's stories. I saw women who sold everything, lost everything, for the sake of getting high.
Right.
You know, their children, their jobs, their families, men who had been imprisoned, you know, their bodies disfigured with calluses from shooting in the same vein all the time and getting abscesses, all of that. And the funny thing is, Jeff, first of all, I just realized that, because there were people that were much older there,
mm-hmm.
younger, black, white, and I realized that, you know what? We're all the same. We're all looking for the same thing. We all want love.
Mm-hmm.
We all want to be validated.
Mm-hmm.
We all, you know, we're all the same. It doesn't matter what
right.
color, what age.
Right. That's your tagline, right?
Yes.
More alike than different.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think that's what you sometimes realize going out into the world. We think our problems are unique. We think we're alone. We think